All financial support for this podcast comes from my patrons on patreon.com. If you'd like to join in with patrons, please check out patreon.com/darwingross. That's darwingrosse. Now enjoy the podcast. All right, today I get a chance to have a discussion with somebody. He was introduced to me by my friend Tom Hall. His name's William Fields, and he has quite a remarkable music practice. He came to Tom's notice because Tom had been at the Algorithmic Arts Conference in San Francisco a while back and was kind of blown away by William's work, and introduced him to me, and I have been equally blown away, so I'm very anxious to talk to him. So with no further ado, let's have a chat with William. Hey, William, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on here.
Oh, it's an honor to have you. I am... thank you, first of all, for sharing some of your work with me so that I could kind of dive in. And I ended up diving in pretty deep because, first of all, there's a lot there. And secondly, it's really kind of compelling. For listeners who might not really know your work, why don't you explain a little bit about your work?
Well, at the moment, there's kind of two sides to it. So I do a lot with algorithmic composition and generative music on the one hand, which really culminated in this project that I did called Fields OS that you're referring to. Mm-hmm. And that music is all 100% generative. So it's completely hands-off. I program my music system to generate the music based on certain rules, and I press record and I let it go. So that's kind of the one end of the spectrum. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the music that I've released on various labels that are and that I do in a live performance setting, which is more improvisational. So and in that case, it's very hands-on. I have a controller where I'm controlling all aspects of the music in the moment, and the music that I release is all just a live recording of these performances, basically. So I don't work with in a DAW, and with I haven't touched a piano roll in probably 15 years at this
lucky
point.
You.
or you know, drawing envelopes or anything like that. I basically just sit down and play and record the results, and you know, the good ones are the ones that I release, basically.
Sure.
So it's kind of two extreme ends of the spectrum. On the one hand, I'm doing music that's very hands-on and improvisational. And on the other extreme, it's completely hands-off and algorithmic. So,
yeah, that's really interesting because not only is it two ends of the spectrum in terms of it being, you know, how you describe your work, but it's kind of two completely different versions of the work process as well, right?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes out of the fact that I don't have a whole lot of time to spend on music, and, you know, I'm a bit lazy. So I want to make things as, you know, fast and easy and fun as possible. But on the other hand, there is some overlap in that in my live performance practice on that end of the spectrum, I am also using these algorithms to kind of dialogue with in some ways. So I can kind of press a button and it'll throw me into a kind of random musical space. And then I improvise based on that. So, you know, which is kind of thrilling in a real live performance up on stage when but you're about to push a button and you don't know what it's going to do.
Right.
And you just have to work with whatever it gives you. So that's kind of what I did at the performance at Algorithmic Arts Assembly in San Francisco that you were talking about. So I'm up on stage and basically I'm hitting a button that just throws me somewhere random, and then I'm steering it and working with it and trying to make it into a musical, you know, arc or narrative. And then I'll push the button again, and it'll throw me somewhere else random, and then I work with that. So there's some overlap, you know, between the two.
Sure, but that also seems like if you don't mind me saying, that seems like sort of a crackheaded approach to things. Because in my experience, for the most part, a lot of people, when they do utilize computers and algorithms in live performance, it's to kind of provide a safety net for their work so that, you know, their live work is still within some parameters that provide them a sense of ease. It seems to me like you are literally putting stumbling blocks on yourself, and then part of the performance is like watching you sort of like survive that process.
Yeah, well, it makes it more exciting for me and hopefully, you know, for the audience too. But to be fair, the algorithms are not completely random. So I use tuned randomness. I mean, I do have the option of going completely random. Mm-hmm. And usually that doesn't sound too good. And it's hard to dig your way out of that.
Right.
But I do have different buttons that have different algorithms that are tuned in different ways. So I can have some degree of control of like what's going on. Like I could have, I don't know, I might have a button that generates like a footwork type track. And so I know that I'm going to get something that's high energy that has, you know, triplets or certain things. So I kind of know what's going on. But yeah, it makes it exciting. And, you know, I'm a big fan of jazz. And so that's also an influence where, you know, you're improvising in the moment. You're working with what you're given and trying to make something good out of it.
Right, right. Well, it is kind of interesting, though, this idea of like tuning algorithms to be useful. You're doing it in your live work, but that also is kind of the concept behind the Fields OS work. Now, that was originally like a radio type show, right?
Right. Yeah. So there was a call for entries that went out for submissions for the radio station Resonance Extra. Mm. They were looking for radio shows that did something different. They were not a typical like DJ playing records type thing. And I had this system that I developed that could generate endless amounts of music. And I was kind of looking for an outlet for that. Like, how can I take advantage of this system, this abundance that the system has to generate so much music? And so I came across this thing for Resonance Extra, and I put together a proposal, submitted it, and it was accepted. And so, yeah, it was a weekly radio show where each week I released an hour of new music that was generated by my music system. You know, each week was basically a different genre or some kind of algorithm or approach. And yeah, I would set up the system, press record, and then press play, and then the system would run for an hour. And that would be the radio show, basically. And I would do some, you know, talk over and do some mm-hmm. introduction and so forth. I had to sometimes do multiple takes if like the first couple tracks were stinkers or something, I would start again. But I did not edit really. I mean, if there was something that was harsh or difficult in the middle of it, I would just leave it in. I was not curating the results at all.
That's really interesting. Now, I'll also say that there's some intrigue just in looking through the titles. So the Fields OS file set is 24 tracks, and it starts off like pretty understandable electro, hip-hop, techno, but eventually you get into breeding music or Brownian techno or whatever, or Unconstrained, which was one that I actually liked. My favorite was number 20 called Variety, which I wasn't sure what I was going to get into when I got into it, and I just found it a really charming sort of like mishmash and very eclectic sounding thing. But what's amazing to me is that while generative, it didn't have kind of the what I had come to be thinking of as generative music, which would have one of two aspects. Either it would be very random, or it would be hyper predictable. And especially as things would tend, people would tend to try and make it sound like a particular style of music, it would tend to get more and more predictable. Almost like, and I have to admit a bias here. If I imagined what machine learning techno would be like, you know, I was scared it would be that, right? And it was very much not. It was very much alive. It kind of breathed. It was transforming in a way that kind of moves stuff forward. And I found it really interesting.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of probability involved. So at the core of it is a kind of probabilistic sequencer. So it's not going to repeat the same thing every bar. You know, there's some subtle randomness and there's kind of a scripting to it. So for example, it'll generate something and play it for, or I'll program the system so that it'll generate something, play that for, I don't know, 4 or 8 bars, and then it'll generate a variation on that where 10% of the parameters are different.
Got it.
So then that sounds like kind of the next section of the song. You can tell it's still the same song because it's mostly the same, mm-hmm. but 10% of it is different. So it sounds like, oh, this is like the B section, right?
Right.
And then I might jump back to the A section. And then after 8 more bars, then I might create a variation on the variation. So it's, again, like it sounds somewhat familiar, but a little bit different. And so through that, I was able to kind of create song structure and variation on the original. So it's not like I'm generating something and then it just sits there and runs for whatever, you know, 32 bars or something. It's generating variations within that structure.
Also. Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And that's, I when you say it that way, I can kind of, you know, hear it in my mind and how that's working. That's really cool. So one of the things I like doing on my podcast is talking to people about their background and how they got to be the artists that they are. And in your case, it seems like there's got to be some really interesting background because to come to things and have sort of like the kind of analytical mind it takes to come up with algorithms to do these sort of genre-oriented works comes like from one area, and conversely, the kind of chutzpah it takes to say, okay, I'm going to play live and have stuff like blurt stuff out and be able to dance on a wire to make that happen is kind of a different space. And I'm curious to know where you came from.
Yeah, and it's also I've found telling the story is a good way to explain how my music system and Fields OS works also. So I guess the beginning for me was when I got a Commodore 64 as a kid and I got really hooked on computers and programming. I would get this, some magazine, some programming, maybe it was Commodore 64 magazine or something like that. They would have code in the back of the magazine and you'd have to type it in.
Oh yeah.
In order to run the program or the game or whatever. And, you know, that's when I learned that if a single character is out of place, it's not going to work. So I got hooked on computers and programming early. Like it just resonated with my brain. It's just, I just love it naturally, for some reason. And, you know, then I got into bulletin board systems. So I'm dating myself here. This is, before the internet, really. And there was some of the listeners might be familiar with, it's called ANSI art. So it's this kind of, I would make this artwork for the bulletin board systems where you'd have to dial in with a modem and you would connect and then you'd see this kind of intro screen, very blocky, pixelated kind of artwork. So I got into that scene of making ANSI art. And then from there, I discovered there was a way, this music thing that people were doing with trackers, and they're called like mod trackers. And that's when I first got into the music side of things. And I got really hooked on that. You know, people would create these mod files and upload them to the BBSs and share them and stuff like that. It was really, you could make your own samples. It was fantastic. And that was, I actually still have some of the old mod files, believe it or not. And the earliest ones I have are from like 92, 1992, I think, 93. is when I first started making electronic music on the trackers.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, things progressed. You know, I made music on like Cakewalk and FL Studio, you know, regular DAW type programs. And I, you know, for a long time, I made music in this kind of traditional way of, you know, using a DAW, drawing in notes on the piano roll, and, you know, slaving over a track for, you know, hours and hours and hours, weeks and weeks, slaving over the mix downs and driving myself crazy.
Sure.
You know, trying to get it to sound good. And so for many years, I worked in this that way. It took a lot of time and was, you know, challenging, not always fun. And then I, you know, I had kids, and that changed things a lot, because I just didn't have the time anymore. I was also working, you know, full-time job. And, you know, for a while, I just wasn't really making music much, just because I didn't have the time. But then I started playing music with a friend of mine, Jeremy Beck. We still make music together and release it as Beck Fields. And he's an amazing singer, musician, pianist, classically trained. He's incredible. But we started just improvising together. And at first, I just had a very simple, I was just running him through effects, basically. And then I started to develop that system more and more. I got, you know, maybe a controller to make it easier. I ended up getting, I use Lemur, the iPad app now, as my main controller. And that makes it really easy to kind of change things around and evolve the system over time, you know. And so then at that point, I'm improvising a lot with my friend Jeremy, and I have this music system. But over time, I develop it more and more to the point where now I can make beats in it. And now I have synths, developed this kind of step sequencer thing, and it gets more and more sophisticated over time. And then, you know, I start performing and making music solo with it, as I've mentioned earlier, doing this kind of improvisational thing where, you know, there was no algorithmic stuff involved at this point. Mm-hmm. So it was just, you know, me sitting down with my music system and making something, which is, again, it's lots of fun. And the system, I'm a strong believer in iteration and practice. So, and this, my playing music with my friend Jeremy is really valuable in that way, that we would, we'd sit down, we'd make music, record the results. You know, I go home the next day and listen to it in my headphones and take notes. Mm-hmm. Basically, like, okay, I want to, you know, this didn't sound good. I need to adjust this, or I want to be able to do this. I want to be able to do that. And then I'd make adjustments to my system, and then we'd go play again and then repeat over and over and over and over again. And that allowed me to evolve my music system. So it became more and more flexible and sounding better and so forth. So now I have this music performance system, which is really fun, but, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, I feel like I'm always falling into the same kind of rut with it. Like, I have certain musical habits, like, okay, I always end up putting like a bass drum on the one snares on, you know, on the three or whatever. And so I realize, okay, I have these controls. I can, you know, with this Lemur thing, I can randomize the controls. I can make a button. If I push it, it will just throw all my controls into a random position, right? So I did that. That was the first step towards the generative. And it's really fun. You know, you end up like finding these musical spaces that you would never find on your own, right? Because we're human beings. We have certain habits. We tend to do the same kinds of things. But this just kind of just throws it, you know, into some random place, and it's really fun. It's almost kind of like a slot machine or something. You just push, I could sit there and push the button over and over again and see what comes out. So that was great fun. But as I mentioned before, like, pure random usually doesn't sound too good. It's too chaotic. There's not enough order or structure to it.
Sure.
So, you know, from there, I started to tune the randomness. So I'd make certain things more likely, certain things less likely, certain things I don't want to actually randomize at all. And you know, then I started to get better results. You know, I get more interesting, more musical results. And you know, that was working really well. But then I realized, okay, I can actually make different algorithms. Like you could imagine multiple randomized buttons where each one works in a slightly different way, or each one has the randomness tuned in a slightly different way. So that now I have, for example, just to take a simple example, like a techno button. Okay, so if I press the techno button, it's going to randomize a lot of the controls, but there's certain things it's not going to randomize. It's going to, you know, it's the tempo is always going to be like 135 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be kick drums, you know, so you know, in certain places. So you have like a 4-4 rhythm, you know, things like that that give it some structure. But within that, there's still a lot of variation and randomness. And then I might have like a, I don't know, like a drum and bass button that structures the beat a little bit differently and so forth. And so you can see how that could lead to this Fields OS thing where, and I can basically develop different randomization algorithms where the randomness is tuned in different ways to create these different genres or to work in different ways. And, you know, I basically use that technology for the radio show. So I also created this kind of scripting language, you know, where I could execute these randomization algorithms, you know, on the beat, as I mentioned before, or like create variations. So, I mean, it's really fun, really powerful, because I basically have the musical, or the state of the system is just a set of numbers. It's just data, but you know, all values between 0 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that, you can do all, not only can you save the state of the system and recall it later, but you can also do fun things. Like you mentioned breeding music, where I would generate two different compositions or songs, whatever you want to call them, two different states of the system. I would play the first one as like the first parent, so to speak. And then I would play the second parent. And then I would breed those two together to make a child.
Sure.
And then you would hear the child. And if you listen, if you pay close attention, you can really hear like the similarities. You can hear a little bit of both parents in the child. So, you know, it's really fun. You know, once you have everything stored in this way as data, you can do all kinds of fun things with it. And yeah, I mean, as you can tell, you know, I'm also, I did end up going into computer science and programming, and I work in IT for my job. So this, you know, this kind of coding stuff is second nature at this point. So if I have an idea, usually I'm able to realize it because of that. But
sure. In order to, I got like 900 questions, and I have to like even pull my shit together here to be able to ask them sensibly. So before we get into the algorithms and stuff, you talk about your music system. What is it? I mean, is it something, is it a coding thing like Tidal? Is it a patching system? What is the music system that you base this off of?
Yeah. So it's kind of this Rube Goldberg machine. Like people have asked me if I'm going to open source it or share it in some way, but it's really hard because it's this patched together collection of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But basically I have a controller, as I mentioned, is Lemur, running on an iPad. That's connected to, I'm actually using JavaScript in, which is running in Google Chrome, okay, as this sort of like data processing layer, so to speak. So that's what's generating the randomness now.
Okay.
Originally I did the randomness inside Lemur itself, but it's kind of limiting. So I moved it out. So I kind of have the control layers, Lemur, this kind of data processing and generation control data layer, which is JavaScript running inside of Chrome. And then that in turn is sending control data to Reaper, which is my main like audio sound generation engine.
Right. Okay.
So Reaper's, I love Reaper. It's really stable and you know, customizable, and it has its own programming language built into it. So I have some like custom plugins, mostly MIDI processing plugins that I've written inside Reaper that are also involved. So it's just kind of evolved that way because, as I explained in the beginning, you know, in my history, it started out as just Reaper, and then I added Lemur as the controller, and then I said, oh, well, you know, it would be nice if I had this kind of layer in between where I could manipulate and control the control data.
Yeah.
So that's how like Chrome got involved. There's also, I also do visual stuff, responsive visuals, but that's another reason why I use Chrome in the middle.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's a collection of technologies that are talking to each other, but I do everything in the box. It's all software. Mm-hmm. I don't even own a keyboard or a synth at all.
So it's really interesting though that you're using that kind of, a lot of your work is done in JavaScript on Chrome. I mean, first of all, when you say that you have kind of reactive visuals, what are the visuals just like WebGL or something in another Chrome window, or how are you doing visuals off of this?
Yeah, and you can, if you check out my Instagram or Twitter, you can check see what they look like. But
okay.
And I have a couple different approaches that I'm working with. But yeah, I mean, I'm using 3JS, which is a JavaScript library for 3D graphics, and that's running inside Chrome. And so I'm using Web MIDI to get, you know, read the MIDI data coming into Chrome,
right,
and then I'm generating, you know, visual events, objects, you know, motion, things like that, based on the MIDI data that's coming in from Reaper, actually. So it's very responsive. It's an area that the music is primary for me, but I'm also very interested in audiovisual music and creating visuals that are very tightly correlated to the sound, so that, for example, you can see like every single hi-hat separately, every single drum hit separately. You can, when the pitch goes up and down, you can see that visually, so that it's not like an FFT audio analysis where it kind of, you know, can figure out what, when there's a bass drum or something like that, but it's very,
very instrument specific. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's another aspect of what I do.
That's really amazing. And I can see where, in comparison to some of the kind of like bespoke musical tools, if you're comfortable working with JavaScript, there's a lot of things there, especially in terms of like multiple state saving and stuff like that, that would be really really conducive to using JavaScript as the tooling.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I mean, it's a kind of a weird language, and it's always changing days. But I really like it. And you know, as you said, there's a lot of stuff out there. You know, I also use P5JS, which is there's this language called processing for doing visual stuff. And the P5JS is the JavaScript version of that. So I do also use that sometimes. So there's a lot out there that you can, a lot of libraries and stuff that you can just download and plug in and start using. And you know, just for, I did have a period in my life where, and actually the first version of my kind of live system was written in PD. Okay. So I did have a period where I worked on these kind of control or flow.
Yeah, data flow languages.
Yeah, data flow languages. But I just found that more text-based programming is more natural for me. I'm able to do what I want easier that way. So this is kind of a personal preference, you know.
Well, that certainly connects though with your history too. I mean, coming from like typing in code listings in the back of the magazine, it seems like code, creative or not, is going to look like text anyway.
Yeah, at least for me, that's what works the best. Yeah.
Now you talk about sort of like this iteration process, and it's really fascinating to imagine the history of these things being developed, starting off with pure random and like just being giddy to hear the effect of that, but then eventually having a desire to pull it into a more musical direction. But it makes me wonder, to what extent did you have to kind of take a break and say, I really need to kind of study what is it that makes hip hop hip hop, or what makes a footwork track work at a really elemental level? How What was the process of like breaking down the music, or did you just like randomly do stuff and be like, oh, that's kind of footworkish, I'm gonna put a button that relates to that,
Well, it was an adventure every week, basically, because I this is a weekly radio show, so I had time pressure, right? I'm just doing this on the weekends, and so I'm just.
So this stuff wasn't pre-cooked ahead of time. I mean, you didn't like already have the UK garage button set up,
No.
and oh, geez.
No, I'd have to sit down and code it out and figure it out. I mean, I've also been listening to electronic music since, the mid-90s or something like that. So I have a lot of experience data in my
Sure.
head, and I analyze it and think about it a lot. So I don't know if I always really hit the mark. I think it's always kind of my interpretation of a certain genre, and I'm not sure, like a purist in any one of those genres would listen to it and be like, no way,
Just lose it. Yeah, right. I guess.
this is not real UK garage or whatever. But I would try to just listen to the genre and analyze and think about, okay, what's going on here? And like UK garage, there's like a ton of swing. It's at a certain tempo. There's a certain beat structure to it, things like that. So yeah, I mean, each week I just have to sit down and figure it out. And sometimes it was a challenge to come up with something, and that's when I started to do these more unusual things like the breeding music or Brownian techno, which is a
Right.
funny one. Like Brownian is a reference to
It's
this kind of
Brownian
random
noise,
culture.
yeah, right.
Yeah. So basically that one, it starts out with a kind of a techno type thing for maybe, 4 or 8 bars. And then it basically starts to slowly fall apart because all of the parameters start to drift in random directions.
Oh,
So you hear
interesting.
it, like the techno track will just slowly break down and fall apart until it's like, just struggling, and it ends up sounding like free jazz or something. And then the whole cycle starts over again. So that's actually one of my favorites. It's fun to listen to. Yeah, but it's just it was a really interesting project and creative challenge, to come up with something each week.
Sure, I'll bet that, like you said, that had to push you pretty hard in probably a pretty cool way. So I'm curious, as you started working with this, I mean, there must have been surprises for you along the way, and like finding that certain kinds of parameter changes or certain kinds of variations surprised you as being artistically valuable, or maybe artistically useless, or even anti-valuable, right? What are some things you found that either were like pleasant surprises or kind of real disappointments?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess one example I could point out is that for each kind of instrument, so to speak, or each sonic element, I have two different envelopes on it. So, for example, for the bass drum, the snare drum, the bass synthesizer, whatever, each one of those has its own filter envelope
Okay.
and pitch envelope. So this allows for a lot of variation. So there's like kind of the envelope's very simple. It's just like the starting point, the ending point, and how fast does it go to get
Sure.
from point A to point B. So that allows you to have just like a simple element, but it can have a lot of variation by just by using those two envelopes. But yeah, like one thing that I really have to restrict often is just the pitch bending, of the, you know, the drums are fine. Like they, I can, it's fine if those get pitched in strange ways. But if I want it to be actually musical or interest, you know, musically coherent, then I have to make sure that the pitched elements are not getting repitched or pitch bent too much, because then it all will sound like crazy and microtonal
Right,
and
right.
weird.
It
But you
starts
know,
sounding
it's
like algorithmic
yeah, right. Yeah, well, and there's I think in the Unconstrained episode, and maybe the ambient, maybe the ambient episode, I do let that run free a bit, and you get some kind of weird microtonal sounding stuff. So
Hmm.
sometimes it can be interesting, but that's one thing that, you know, we humans like, you know,
Like clamp
things to
down,
be,
yeah.
yeah, we like things to be pitched and harmonious in certain ways most of the time.
Sure. Now, in going through the Fields West stuff, one of the things I notice is that generally you kind of would pick a tempo and kind of stick with it. Is that because tempo variations were kind of hard to manage within these kind of variation models?
No, it's not really a problem. I think it's more just I saw a lot of times tempo is a big part of the genre.
Oh, good point. Right,
You
right.
know, so techno, of course, is at a certain, usually at a certain tempo, and drum and bass, like
And hip hop's
172
definitely
or
right,
hip
yeah.
hop's. Yeah. So that to me, that was just kind of a core part of the genre. I mean, again, in like the Unconstrained experimental type episodes, the tempo did jump around a bit
Right.
more. So yeah.
And then, in terms, you talk about having like these sounds having different envelopes and stuff like that. The sounds themselves, are those held in like tracks in Reaper, or where does the sound exist where you can sort of like edit it? And then, do you have different sound sets that you use for different kind of stylistic purposes?
So I'm using all software synthesizers
Ah, okay, got it.
and samples. So it's mostly synthesized.
Got it.
There's no samples or loops involved. Well, there are some samples in the drums for like the transients, because I want to get a certain quality to like the snare or the bass drum or something like that. And in those cases, but they're just like single shot, you know,
Right. And
samples.
it's encapsulated in a soft synth in some way.
Right,
Got it.
exactly. And for the most part, I kept the synths and the samples, kind of the sound generation engine part of it the same through Fields, all the Fields OS episodes. I think I made some changes in like the hip hop episode. I used like a different snare because I wanted a certain quality.
Right.
Or I might ch make a few changes here and there, but for the most part, it's the same like sound engine. And yeah, it's all synthesized. I actually use this. My main synth is, it's called Surge,
Okay.
and it's an older soft synth. I actually bought it when it was you know, it was a commercial product, but then it went defunct for years. And I just loved it, and I was so used to it. I just continued to use it. But then last year or a few months ago, I discovered that it was open sourced, and it's alive again, and they're
Oh,
developing
cool.
it. So I recommend checking that out. It was developed by one of the guys that went on to found Bitwig.
Interesting.
I think Vember Audio was the name of his company. But yeah, he went on to do Bitwig, and so this synth got abandoned, but now it's happily alive again and thriving. So I recommend checking it out. It's a great synth.
Is that Surge like Surge or
Right.
Serge?
Surge.
Surge. Okay, cool. Well, that sounds really interesting. I'd never even heard of it, so that gives me something kind of sniff around with. I love it. Now, I noticed that recently I got a thing. You're going to be coming to my neck of the woods. I live near Minneapolis, and I see that you're going to be
Oh, really?
playing at a festival at the beginning of December called In Situ.
Right. Yeah.
When you go on, like, quote, on the road to do these kinds of performances, Do you bring anything other than your laptop and Lemur on the iPad? Is that what, or do you keep that tight of a system? Or do you bring peripherals just to make it feel more at home?
Well, no, I mean, I'm pretty much a minimalist. Yeah, so it's just my laptop and my iPad for Lemur and my audio interface. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Unless I need to, I'm doing visuals and I need to bring a projector.
All right.
That as well, but I really like keeping it simple from that perspective and minimal. And you know, I'm not, obviously not into modular or analog or anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not a purist in that sense. I mean, maybe it's just my ears aren't good enough. I don't hear the difference, but it's just so convenient and so flexible to do everything in software. So I just like to work that way.
Sure. Now, it's interesting because you talk about not being a purist from the standpoint of like analogs or modulars. But what I do notice is that you find yourself in a lot of festivals with people who are sort of like the live coder folks, for yeah. whom their performance, a real specific part of like the purist part of it, is to be projecting their code on screen while they're developing it and all that stuff. I mean, it's funny that while the coding part of it is a part of your practice, that's also not a thing that you're a purist about either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have kind of fallen into this community, which is wonderful. It's a great community, and but I do also feel a little bit strange about it because, yeah, I don't do live coding. Obviously, algorithms are a big part of what I do, and programming is a huge part of what I do. But my approach is different. It's more, I think of it as more of a kind of gestural approach to performance. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm using the controller and. Yeah, to me, live coding, I mean, I don't have much experience with it. And some people are absolute wizards with it. You're like Kindome, Rennick yeah. Bell. These guys right, are right. amazing what they're able to do. But to me, it feels like you're trying to build your instrument on stage in front of the audience and then play it at the same time.
Yeah.
And to me, I would rather have my instruments, practice it a lot, get really good at it, and then, you know, bring my instrument on stage and play it. It's just a little bit, you know, different mindset.
Sure, sure. That makes a lot of sense. Well, William, I can't believe it, but our time's up already. We blew through that really quickly.
Yeah.
But before I let you go, why don't you give people a few hints about where to go to experience some of this music, to check out some of the FieldOS stuff, maybe to get a chance to hear or see some of your live performance work or some of the live visuals. You mentioned Instagram and Twitter have some stuff. What's your handle over there?
It's William Fieldsy. So William Fields with a Y at the end.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nice. On both, that's on both Instagram and Twitter. I don't do Facebook for my artist stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I have williamfields.com and there's links to everything there. And, but I'm most active on Twitter at William Fieldsy and on Instagram also at William Fieldsy. So yeah, and I have, let's see, FieldsOS, you could check out on Bandcamp. Right.
Yeah, that's williamfields.bandcamp.com. He has your release work on it too, right?
Right. Yep, and I've got this festival, as you mentioned, in Minneapolis. I'm a little scared of the weather.
December isn't... No, it doesn't get bad till February.
It gets worse.
February is when you'll cry.
But. Oh, no. But yeah, I'll be performing and giving a talk there on augmented creativity. So that should be fun. And I have a release coming out soon, hopefully in the next month or two on Conditional Records called Shaka Maxon. And I've got an amazing set of remixes from some incredible artists that are going to be on that as well. So keep an eye out for that too. But yeah, feel free to get in touch. You know, if you have any questions, send me an email or on Twitter or anything. I'd be happy to talk.
Fantastic. Well, William, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to have this chat. It was super revealing. It actually makes me want to start working on my own algorithms, because especially as you talk about this iterative thing, it's like, well, you're never going to iterate if you don't get started, right?
That's right. That's a big part of it. Yep.
Indeed. Thank you so much for the time. It was fabulous to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Again, it was an honor.
All right. Well, with that, I'll let you have your day. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, many thanks to William for the great discussion. My goodness, there's a lot to consider there. And if you are like me and have any interest in fiddling around with algorithmic song creation or sequencing or whatever, you probably came out of that as inspired as I did. I want to thank him so much for that. And if you're interested in more, please jump over either to the podcast show page, or if you're interested, jump over to Patreon, where not only can you find out more about my personal interactions with William, but also to hear a special generative piece that he did specifically for the patrons of the podcast. Drop over to patreon.com/darwingross. Otherwise, as always, artmusictech.libsyn.com will have the show notes. You can get all the links for information there. I want to thank you, the listeners, for continuing to come on by and listen, sharing, all that kind of stuff. It's really great. And remember, if you're in Minneapolis this week, you're going to get a chance to hear William, as well as a number of other people, do both talks as well as performances at the In Situ concert. So please, again, you can check the show notes for information on that. I hope to see you there. I'll be there every night. So hopefully we'll get a chance to bump shoulders. With that, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much and have a good one.